out of life out here.
Hello everybody, welcome to the UK Packers podcast. As usual, I'm your host, that's DDDNFL on Twitter, and of course follow the group at UK Packers. I was just going through my phone, looking at receipts. I keep saying I'm going to drop this sort of receipts podcast or video, and it's just one absolute mwah. I like to start the podcast with a soundbite, and I'd like to do non-Packers ones as well because they're hilarious. But there's one in particular. I was just about to drop it, but it doesn't do it justice because the face is being pulled during this receipt video is amazing. Now, if anyone listening, they go receipt video, sounds dirty. It is. So anyway, moving on. How is everyone doing out there? It's a bit of a vast expanse of nothingness, isn't it? So I've reached out on the old Twitter box and on other... I've got a squeak chair in the studio, by the way. Don't know if you know that. I reached out on social media just to ask, what are people doing? Hey, you. What are you doing during the off-season? And is it Packers related? Because I'm releasing videos, right? The last one they released was they shot Dan Devine's dog in the face and they murdered him. And it's about that Time magazine thing. So I released that. You know what? And this is what I have to do better. I'm quite good, I think, or getting there, or whatever. Where's the modesty? I'm Irish, right? So I have no emotions. It's just all modesty. Podcasts is kind of my thing. Audio, love it, right? I would not go as far to say I'm an audiophile because it just sounds weird, but I do like it. But video is a different beast. Video involves you trying to treat the audience like... These are goldfish, toddlers, basically, parents, you're parental, because you need to just keep having things pop out on the screen and put them in your face every 2 seconds just to keep you interested. So I released that video. I think it's like 2.5 to 4 minutes long or something. I can't remember. Maybe it's 5 minutes. But when you look at their audience retention, falls off a cliff. So there's a Venn diagram somewhere of people who are actually interested in the information versus those who have the attention span to keep listening. Or, and this is more possible, my video work needs absolute upgrading and is absolute crap. If you're coming along on the journey with me and you like it, great. If you don't, you know, don't watch it like everybody else. And I did mention it. Look, we're doing an all-expenses-paid trip to Lambeau Field. We do raffles every single month and we give out signed Packers rare merchandise. It gets more and more expensive to more people to join. Yada, yada, yada. But the main one is that every month we also do a draw for an all-expenses-paid trip to Lambeau Field to put your name forward for a final draw that's been done in August. So I'll be releasing March's Raz over the next week, maybe or less, which means that you have April, May, June, July, August to get involved. So that's 5 months as I count it on my fingers. I'm an accountant. So you've got 5 months to get involved. It's for as little as a fiver. Or if you want to be involved in the merch draw, it's a tenner. And I go through everybody who's been a Raz member who hasn't won a prize yet, and I try to get a prize out to you. So if you join that raffle Raz merch tier, if you stay in it long enough, I get a prize out to you, right? That's how it works. So anyway, patreon.com/UKPackers. And I'm going to talk about, because what's this podcast all about? Well, it's a vapid expanse of the off-season. And I did ask what people were doing, and is it Packers related and all that jazz? An awful lot of people are like, yeah, I just stuff it full of other sports. How are people enjoying the Formula One, by the way? The funniest thing I've seen so far is that Max Verstappen is driving so fast that he's passed out Lewis Hamilton in a Ferrari next year already, which is great. Well done. Well done, internet. You win. So I'm going to talk in this podcast a couple of things. One of them is timelines. And included in that, and this is the thing, we're getting at this a lot actually, is that when do we announce the Lambeau Tour and all that jazz? And I'll go through that when I'm going on through the timelines. I want to talk about Raz, right? Not Raffle this time. It's RAS, which is a Raz score. Because we hear that Brian Gutekunst is obsessed with it, and that's why he drafts the people that he does. And I'm going to examine that too, is that does Gutekunst lean heavily into the Raz score and is he alone in that? And finally, I'm going to do a bit of history as well. So if you stick around long enough, we're going to talk about how Vince Lombardi nearly became a priest. And I mean, very nearly became a priest. He was in preschool. Come on down to preschool. But first, I'm going to talk timelines. So we've seen the combine, and this is why I sort of ask people as well, like, what are you doing? because people switch off. Undoubtedly, they switch off. In fact, part of me switches off as well. So there's an awful lot of stuff. And I'll go through the laundry list of stuff that's coming up on the NFL schedule. And some of the stuff is like, meh, who cares? Like, I really don't give two dams. And the one thing I'm very excited for, and this is the only thing that keeps me going, is Peter Jones' draft guide, the UK and Irish Packers draft guide. He's kind enough to spend 18 months doing this thing. So he's already working on the one that he's going to release in April. He's already working on that a year and a half ago. So he's working away on that. And I can't wait to do the podcast with Peter Jones, because the amount of slam dunks that Peter has got over this draft guide is ridiculous. The content of the draft guide is ridiculous. And I'm not big into college football at all. Now, when we go over on the annual trip, we go and see a Badgers game. It's a great spectacle. You're mostly there for jump around, right? When enter the Richter scale of all diving around to an Irish or Irish-derived song in House of Pain. So that's all great, but I don't pay attention to it. But Peter dives in and just ignores largely what every other draftnik is saying and goes with his own instinct. And part of that was him pulling out Jordan Love and saying, putting a box around it in the draft guide and saying, watch out for this dude. And all of the shock and awe and craziness that went on when Jordan Love was drafted. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, I'm just saying, he should have read Peter Jones' UK and Irish Packers draft guide. All right? If he did, wouldn't be such a surprise. Wouldn't have been in this mess. But I'm going to talk about it because I largely switch off from it because, you know, there's the off-season programs. You kind of know that the OTAs are in there somewhere. Training camp. The rookie mini camp is in there as well somewhere. The combine happened, but a lot of people don't pay attention because it's just a bunch of dudes and vests running around getting hit in the head with footballs. Because there's always a video every year of someone getting smacked in the face with a football. But I'm going to get down through the timelines and kind of show you how it goes. And what I will say to you is the one thing to take from it, and I'm not going to get too granular, right? Because it's like me reading out the calendar, right? Or the laundry list of stuff that people drink when they go on a night out. It's always boring. But what to take from it is that nearly every month now, there's something going on that will hit the headlines in some degree that will keep us going. So the combine has happened. So that's February 26th to March 4th. It is Mother's Day today. So tomorrow, it's the legal tampering period. And it's apt that I'm doing this podcast of a Mother's Day because I've had relationships with every listener's mother. Yeah. So congratulations. Who's your daddy? So legal tampering period happens now on March 11th, 12th and into the 13th. And then the league year 2024 officially opens. And I have Roger Goodell's voice in the back of my head when I'm doing the draft things on March 13th. So what's the difference between the legal tampering period and the league year opening? Well, the tampering period is where they can kind of wheel and deal behind the scenes. They chat to people, but they're really not allowed. And then the deals can become official as of 4 o'clock on league day opening, which is Wednesday, so March the 13th. After that, then the league annual meeting happens, and this is where there's always this stuff being bandied around about rule changes, and this is where they change the rules and kickoffs. So that's March 24th to the 27th is the league meeting. So Gutekunst and all those lads and Mark Murphy, and you'll see all of these quotes coming out from these lads where they start talking about rule changes, and they're all hanging around, swanning around, getting pictures taken in their suits. It's all great. Then the off-season workout programs begin in April. So February combine, March tampering period, but then March 13th, halfway through the month, basically, the league year opens. So you'll see all of this coming in about players being signed and traded and wheeled and dealed and all this jazz. Annual league meeting, all these sort of token interview stuff. Off-season workouts hit April 1st. Now, that's for first-year head coaches. So there was a while back, like who can remember now, when Matt LaFleur came in, and he had his team and he was trying to go through stuff. That was April 1st. You have to wait 2 more weeks if you're not a first-time head coach. And I could get into, well, who are the first-time head coaches? What should we expect? But who cares? You're in here listening to this because you're a Packers fan. The Packers are going to start their off-season workouts on April 15th. Then we start getting into pre-NFL draft stuff. So you bring the prospects to your facility on April 17th, which is 2 days after you start your off-season workouts. Restricted free agents have to sign their offer sheets 2 days after that on April 19th. And then a week after that, then the deadline is set for the restricted free agents to sign to match those offer sheets. And you can meet the draft prospects outside the facility. You're not allowed to bring them in because the very next day, which is April 25th, that's when the NFL draft is. And this year it is in Detroit. So that was a bit of a mouthful. But this is, we always hear this every year of like, did you hear much from the Packers? And sometimes that answer is no. They're like, no, they didn't speak to me at all. Or, you know, they met me at the combine. We had a couple of sentences or whatever. And then there was nothing. And then all of a sudden they get drafted. But other lads are brought in and they tend to hit the headlines. And again, the sort of, I don't know, people to be keying in on the safety. So the NFL draft swings around at April 25th. We all know it's a 3-day bonanza. It's a big event and all this. And this is really the crux of Peter Jones's draft guide. So before April 25th, and myself and Peter will sit down and sort of, you know, start releasing dates and content all before that. Round one kicks off and it's late at night. So if you're going to stay up for the Packers pick, you always have to stay up late. And then there's always that danger that they trade away and all this. And we're going to take those predictions off the lads in our draft podcast before. So the next day, April 26th, is round 2 and 3. And then the day after that, it goes really quickly, which is round 4 to 7. So the first day is the fanfare. The second day is where the Packers tend to pick up some nice little gems in there. And that's why Peter's draft guide is always brilliant to dive in, particularly when we start getting round 4 to 7. And he does his sort of big board of top 200 players. And you can really sort of spot, where did we draft him? Where was he in Peter's top 200? And it'll give you a good marker about what that value was. So May 2nd, the fifth year option deadline for the 2021 picks comes up. And then there's May 3rd to 6th or May 10th to 13th. You can pick which one you do. And that's rookie minicamp. So they've signed these fellas. They've signed an extra bunch of undrafted free agents. And then they bring all of these lads in for a rookie minicamp to take a good look at them. And we see lads who are drafted but are injured and they don't get to partake in rookie minicamp. And again, they get to training camp or OTAs or whatever. You know, they don't know or they're rusty or they don't have the playbook or they're trying to learn it offline and all that kind of stuff. So this is an important date then for everybody asking, when do we announce our Lambeau tour? So we do a tour to Lambeau Field every single year. And the last, I think, 4 years, it's been sold out and we've sold out quickly. So again, I don't sell holidays. This gets sold out. So go to Touchdown Trips. And there's, I think it's ukpackers.co.uk/tours. And go there and you can find all the details. You can put down a deposit now on the trip to make sure you don't miss out. So the NFL schedule release comes out in early May. Can't remember the date last year. I should have looked it up before the pod. But that comes out early May. So basically about a week or a week and a half after that schedule release, we nail down what games make sense. So games early in the season don't usually fit because people are putting their kids back into school and all that kind of jazz in early September. Games that are way too late don't suit because it's too close to Christmas and New Year's. So we usually look for that sweet spot of October, mid-October to early November, because you can still get your snow, you still get the wonders of Lambeau, but it doesn't clash with Christmas or people going back to school. Sometimes we mix it with the midterm break. And if we can do that, then it's great because you might be taking the time off anyway because your kids are going to be off school. If you don't have kids, you don't need to worry about it, obviously. So the spring league meeting happens May 20th to 22nd. Again, more headlines, rule changes, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then OTAs are late May to early June. And they're voluntary. And then sometimes you see the lads having signing bonuses and all that jazz for how much they participate in off-season workouts that come in for OTAs. And then the franchise tag deadline comes then about a month after that on July 17th. And then the real bread and butter stuff, which is training camp, is from mid to late July, because when it starts swinging around to August, then we're looking at preseason. So the Hall of Fame game in Canton and preseason kicks off on August 8th and they go right through to August 25th. They take a break. We see them cutting down rosters and all that kind of stuff during those preseason buildups. And then the first regular season game is Thursday, September 5th. So as you can see, there's stuff going on every single month from, you know, March, league opens, April, they go and do some off-season workouts. April, again, is the pre-draft. And then the draft comes around late April. May swings around. We've rookie minicamp. The NFL schedule release happens also in early May. We get to plan the tour. We're sort of getting closer and closer to that all-expenses-paid trip. And then into July, May into June, we've OTAs. July, training camp. And then August, preseason kicks off. And then before you know it, the kids are back in school. Summer's over. You have a nice tan on your arse. And then it's Thursday, September 5th, and the regular season opens. So kind of in preparation then to looking at the draft, right? And I'm not going to get into the draft prospects and what we're going to expect from safeties and all that kind of jazz. I want to get into one thing that we see bantied around. And some people, again, might take sort of a sideways glance at it. But we see an awful lot of stuff about the RAS score. right? And you look at the RAS and you're like, oh, here's Gudekunst again. Typical, though, Gudekunst going for the old RAS score. So a RAS score was invented by this dude, massive Detroit Lions fan, apparently. And he came up with this sort of metric. And what it is he takes a player's height, the weight, hand sizes, wingspans, how high they jump, their drill results, like the 40-yard dash, all of that stuff, and they put it into one number. So they add all of that stuff up, and on a scale of 0 being the lowest and 10 being the highest, they put it into a single number. Anything above 8 is, you'll see it in a little box, it'll be green, right? And not only does it take sort of all of that stuff into account, but it sets you against all of your other players at your position. So if you have a safety with a high RAS score, then that's that safety score matched against some other safety score. And it goes right back to the 80s of when they were doing these. I think it's the 80s, but it's a very long way. So when you look at someone with a RAS score that's very high, he's compared to his peers of that year and then also players going way back when. So we always hear this thing of, you know, Brian Gutekunst is absolutely obsessed with the RAS score and all this kind of stuff. And Bill Huber did a great article last year or the year before, I think it was last year, where he broke down sort of like, let's look at the teams and let's see if that is a load of nonsense. Now, if you look at the big time players, by and large, they have a fairly good RAS score, right? So let's go back and look at Lucas Van Ness, 9.39, Luke Musgrave, 9.78, Jaden Reed, 6.74. So, oh my God, Gutekunst, what are you doing? Ended up being a fantastic player. Tucker Kraft, really high. Colby Wooden, really high. Sean Clifford, really high. Dontavian Wicks, the same. Carl Brooks, low. And then Anders Carlson didn't have a RAS score, because if you don't complete all of those drills, then they can't give you a RAS score. But anyway, we're into the seventh round. Carrington Valentine, above 9. Anthony Johnson above 8, Grand DuBois above 8. So you look at it and you're like, oh, well, maybe there's something to it then, because all of those guys have a high RAS score. But it kind of makes sense. You know, you're looking for the most athletic guys at their position in the draft. And as well as that, an awful lot of these stats in the draft are just ridiculous. I'm always surprised by Peter's draft guide every year. You have to take a shot every time I say Peter's draft guide or Peter's name. Is that when you look at these players, it's like he was the record-breaking guy, the best person in the history of ever. And he might expect it to be going in the seventh round. You're like, well, what are we doing? Is because these players, there's just such an upper echelon of human being that ends up going in for the draft and then getting drafted. It's that whole thing of, you know, 5% of all college players end up in the NFL. And then I think the lifespan of those is almost the same as Vietnam. It's 3 to 5 years, right? Obviously, Vietnam is 3 to 5 days, probably, to land there. So look, let's look at Bill Huber's article then. And he asks the question that we all want to know. Is Green Bay overly biased when it comes to drafting players with a high RAS score? And RAS, we're counting as green, right? The Colts, all 12 of their picks, green. 100% record. Bears, the same. Eagles, the same. Jets, the same. Now, they had different number of picks and all that kind of jazz. And some of them didn't have RAS scores, so he's after taking those out. The Saints, 100%. Ravens, 100%. Broncos, 100%. Commanders, 85%, Steelers, 85%, and that's where you find the Packers. We had 13 picks, 9 were green, 2 were yellow, so that's an 81%, which apparently is the second highest. So is it true then that the Packers always are biased? No, everybody is. You try to get the best players. Now again, you find diamonds in the rough, and Gutekunst is pretty good for doing that. But again, the RAS scores of some of these guys taken in later rounds are pretty stellar. So RAS score, it's relative athletic score. It's relative to people at your position. And it takes all of those metrics. And does Gutekunst lean into it? Yes, but so does everybody else, right? Makes absolute sense. You're going to go for people who are trying to grade at the highest of all of those drills and to be highest in height and all that. And we know Gutekunst has that prototypical wide receiver style body, right? Slim, tall, fast. And it's the same with cornerbacks and safeties and all that. You know, he kind of goes on the bigger end. When he doesn't, he goes for the likes of Jaire Alexander, who we all know is 4'2". Anyway, I'm going to get into stuff now. Something that always really interested me, because that sort of, those articles about shoulda, woulda, coulda sometimes are nonsense, right? But I like to look at Vince Lombardi and look at the fact that he almost didn't make it as a coach for many different reasons. And I already did one story where he was almost killed and ran over when he was riding a little Shetland pony up his uncle's track. That sounded weird. Don't know why. So he almost got knocked over by a van. And then when you look forward then, because he was an Italian-American and there was that sort of they said anyone whose name ended with a vowel would never get a head coaching job. So there was that stacked up against him. I've already went into the racism that he faced in college, where they said, you know, Vince, come here, and they got another Italian guy and wanted to see who was darker, apparently was the quote. Theirs, not mine. And that really annoyed him. So he was used to dealing with this, and it didn't look like he'd potentially get his shot, you know, back in the 50s and 60s when it came to coaching. But he ended up getting it. Another big reason for that, and in fact, it made him the person who he was that Vince Lombardi almost became a priest. So I'm going to talk about that now. Don't go away.
This is you as an All-American and a big opportunity for you in Hollywood. You must have had to beat off a lot of American men to get this part. Why does that make you giggle? Did you not have to beat them off?
You had to get the role. There was, imagine there was quite a few men up for the role as well.
There were.
And compose yourself.
Right, another history lesson. Or, do you know what? It's not even a lesson. Who am I to be teaching you history, right? Especially if you're a Wisconsinite. But let's talk about it. Let's talk about Vince Lombardi. I'm always fascinated by characters like this and what exactly made up the character or why they are the way they are. And there's an awful lot of fascinating stuff about Vince Lombardi. You know, his quotes have stretched all the way this far at the time, and they'll continue to do so. And the way he was, you know, the devoutness of his religion, the discipline that he went on about, the suits. He always made his team wear suits and sort of, you know, do themselves up that way. His coaching and teaching style, his philosophy. An awful lot of that comes from an early age. And in fact, an awful lot of that comes from the college, Cathedral College of Immaculate Conception, where Vince Lombardi went, where he thought he was going to be a priest. Now, to skip ahead as to why he didn't become a priest, and then you can switch the podcast off if you want. He didn't become a priest for three reasons, really. One, the celibacy rule, right? He liked the ladies. And the second one was football. He really loved football. And then also he had a bit of a temper, an anger on him. And he said it was very unpriest-like for him to become a priest because he just didn't have the temperament. But in the summer of 1928, at age 15, he decides to go to the Cathedral College of the Immaculate Conception. It was like a high school slash college, and it would take him 6 years to go through and complete this whole program between the high school and college portion of it. Now, spoiler alert, he doesn't. He goes and does four, and the main reason for that is the ones that I've mentioned. It was a school that was run by this faculty of priests from Brooklyn, and it was all about discipline at that stage. And you know, it's a really, really great book by David Marinas, When Pride Still Mattered, and he goes into it in a lot of detail. But, you know, there was an awful lot of disciplinarians there, and the regiment that he had was to get up before dawn and go to church. So that's something that he kept up throughout his whole life. And, you know, people looked at that and said, oh, well, he's obviously very devout. I mean, look what he does. You know, because there's that whole God family in the Green Bay Packers. And his favourite photo as a kid was him on his communion. Well, his favourite mother's photo, I guess, which is why it was one of his favourites, was him standing in front of the house in his devout gear. So yes, he was devout, but it was also about habits. And it was about just, that's just something that he did. So from this age onwards, from 15 onwards for 4 years, you know, again in his formative years, he'd have to get up at the crack of dawn or just before, and then he'd have to go to mass. And that's something that he kept up, and he did it when he was in Green Bay. And as I say, that's discipline and habit as much as it is, you know, him being devout. But anyway, so the other thing that they say he built here, and this is again David Marinas from the book, is that he built this sort of, you know, obedience to superiors thing there, because the way that these schools were run, very military style sometimes, right? You'd get up, you'd have a set regime, you'd have to do this, that, and the other. And then also an awful lot of his teachers back then, they talk about Father James Smith, and that he was a taskmaster, and that his way of teaching was to make it clear even to the pupil who, you know, was a bit slow to catch up. So that's something that Vince Lombardi brought in to his later life. And the other one was Jack Jocko Crane, who would drill into them through repetition and talk about fundamentals and all this type of stuff. And apparently, you know, he was a coach of baseball and basketball. And that's where Vince Lombardi got that thing. Focus on your fundamentals, you know, master the really easy stuff. Do it again and again and again and again. And he talked about the fact that, you know, there was another assistant coach that made the kids sort of fall in line and not slag him off behind his back and to really respect him. And obviously that meant an awful lot to Vince Lombardi. And not all, so that's something that's easy to understand, right? You look at that and you sort of go, well, he was in this place. He didn't have a chance. It was military style. They were kind of making him do all that kind of stuff when he didn't want to. But the other thing that stands out to me was is just the way Vince was anyway. I mean, he apparently had an intimidating presence. He was a big lad. You know, his physical maturity was further ahead than all the other students. And again, when you look at him in later life, you see him and you're like, well, he's quite small, actually, wasn't he? Like 5'8". But he was 5'8" when he was in the school. So to all the other kids, he was quite big. And he was always quite serious as well. There was always this talk of him having kind of a smirk on his face. But look, he wanted to lead from that age. He had the size and the height to lead. He had the physical maturity. He had those temper, not temper tantrums, probably a wrong word, but, you know, he was very authoritative. So the intimidating presence, the fact that he wanted to be a leader, you know, kind of not seen as a goody two-shoes as such, but in all the photos, he's always up the front with the priests, you know. So for 4 years in a row, he was elected class president. And part of that job was that they'd all sit in the classroom and the different priests and all that would come into the class and teach them while they're there. So there'd be periods where there would be no authoritative figure. And who took it upon himself to do it? Vince Lombardi. He'd get up and, you know, try to keep everybody in line. He'd tell them to shut up. He'd tell them to keep quiet. But they also said that, because I'd look at that and go, well, then he wasn't very likable. And that was something that was leveled at Vince Lombardi later in life. They said, like, this guy, you know, he's just cranky. You know, he's just nasty and he's always bellowing. But not really, because they said that even at this point, he seemed to master. They said he had an outburst of laughter and that he was a likable fellow, again, per the book. But the one thing that stood out to Vince Lombardi through all this time was is that he absolutely loved football. So he played this thing called sandlot football, which is basically, you know, just go off and do it in your spare time. And the priests were always trying to get him not to do it because the big no-no, there was two massive no-nos in Catholic school. I mean, one of them was violent sports. They said absolutely not. And it wasn't the violence as such, right? It was football itself. And they released this thing from the college, and there's this big treatise of like all of the things that they hate about football. And not only was it about the violence of it, but they said, you know, discipline was down. People tried to cheat. Their morals were questionable. So they always go into that sort of physical side of things. So it wasn't only, you know, just the violence and you'd get hurt. Because Vince, in fact, used to sort of sneak away and under a pseudonym would be going boxing. So he'd come back to school with a black eye. So, you know, they'd look at him and go, Jesus Christ, what are you doing? So again, two bad, bad no-nos in Catholic school. One was the violent sport. And then the second one was, you know, the whole celibacy rule. You couldn't hang out with girls. That was the worst. But Vince Lombardi loved football. You know, any chance he'd get, he'd hop on the subway and he'd try to go to the polo grounds to watch the Giants, or he'd go to Fordham and Pitt. And he was a diehard football fan. And it was that plus his temper plus the life of celibacy that he sort of said, you know what? And then it sort of came along as well that, and this is all about opportunity, is that scholarships in this other school called St. Francis Prep were sort of being handed out like Smarties, right? Because they were trying to, their school was crumbling. So they were trying to get young lads in who knew how to play football. And Vince just happened to be in the right place at the right time. So, you know, he doesn't know if he's cut out for the priest lifestyle. He thinks his personality is not really suited. Loves football and has this opportunity to go at age 19 then, jumps ship after 4 years, gets out and gets paid $150 scholarship to go to St. Francis. He gets his books, he gets his tuition, and then he gets on the football team as well, and the rest is history. But again, you know, had he had a different experience, had football not been a massive part of his life, well, then you'd imagine that he would have been Father Lombardi. And another little tidbit that stands out from the book is that there was a priest there that used to try break these guys down. You know, they said the celibacy rule alone and women would, you know, one third of the guys would fall by the wayside because they'd want to go out and sort of hang out with girls. So that would knock on them. And then the other time, your man had just tried grind them down. And he kept saying to them, you know, you're not into this. You don't want to do this. You're only here because your parents want you to be here. And the same was kind of true for Vince Lombardi, because no one in his family, on both sides of his family's mother's or father's side, had ever become a priest. But, you know, it was the Irish mothers, you know, Italian mothers apparently, that were sending all of their kids off to be priests because it was a really honourable thing to do. And I can sort of, you know, feel that sort of sentiment, because back in Ireland in the early, I don't know, 20s onwards. It was that kind of thing as well. If you were a man of the cloth and someone in your family become a priest, and that's what they wanted to do. And Vince's mother was like that. She used to go around boasting about the fact that young Vinny was off becoming a priest. And as I said earlier, her favourite photograph was him standing outside on his communion, all devout and pious looking. So again, he tried to break them down. And I think that, and it isn't said in the book, or I haven't read it anywhere else, but I get a sense of that off Vince Lombardi, you know, when he's out saying to the players, like, oh, you don't want it, you're not going to get your job back, you don't want this, you know, you're not up for this. And he'd grind down these players, and he knew that the players that were left standing were the players that were going to play and fight for it all. And that's exactly what they did. And we saw, if you read Jerry Kramer's book, you know, at the end of his book, he's sort of saying like, ah, it's kind of like Riggs and Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon, like, I'm getting too old for this. You know, when the desire starts to go, and that's when you just can't sort of hack it. And that's what Vince Lombardi used to key in on. So important that an awful lot of his coaching style, the fact that he wanted to be a leader of men came from the fact that he was more physically mature, more sort of demanding. He wanted to lead people. He could lead people because people were kind of scared of him. You know, all of that stuff led all the way up. And by the time everybody catched up with his height, he'd already built this sort of personality on, you know, devoutness, on discipline, on repetition, on fundamentals. And he loved football, and it all came together, and he ended up going on to be the coach that he did. I just find it a fascinating story. But anyway, that's me at Steedy the NFL. Do stay tuned to the podcast. The other off-season podcasts will be released, including all the draft coverage. Go to patreon.com/UK Packers if you want to win an all-expenses paid trip to Lambeau Field, and follow us on youtube.com/UK Packers for any new history ones that do drop. I'll try to keep them short and sweet. But anyway, that's it for this week. Talk to you then.